Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the KE Report. This is the first section of four segments. We're going to be dealing today quite a bit with the concept of the medical industry. I hate to call it an industry in the United States. Larry, you really piqued my curiosity. I've done quite a bit of research on it. I've been through some real difficult times in the past month that obviously involve the medical industry. Going to chat about that. Going to devote the entire second half to the medical industry with Jeff Deist, the president of the Mises Institute. He agrees with you and I, Larry, but we're going to start out with politics right now. I've got my buddy Jim McKinney on the line with us right now. We're recording this on Thursday. Jimmy, let's go over what's going on with the voting regulations, specifically in Arizona. The reason I want to focus on this for a while is I think that after the last election, people in the United States, unless they are 1,000,000% progressives, really don't trust the election process anymore. Let's start out with your comments, Jimmy.
Yeah, I think you're right. There are a lot of people, left and right, that are unsure of the real outcome of the November 3rd, 2020 election. And the reason why there were a lot of ambiguities, a lot of people did not believe that Joe Biden would win the presidency. Even Democrats didn't believe that. And then you have these problems where at midnight, the Trump team was well ahead in key states, and then in a matter of 3 hours or 3 to 5 hours, they changed. But then there was, in key states and actually key counties, election observers were not allowed to watch the vote, and there was a lot of changes in election law to allow compensation for the COVID lockdown. And there's a real push to not allow, not worry about voter identification, even though most Americans want to see voter identification by like a 70%+ margin.
Yeah.
So there's a lack of respect for the system. And what happened today, Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld an Arizona law that makes it basically that stops vote harvesting. And in areas where there's mail-in balloting is approved, those are mostly Democratic areas, and in these major cities and counties that actually where there were problems, there was a huge voter harvesting push because of COVID. So this is a very important 6-3 vote on the Supreme Court that overturned a Ninth Circuit Court ruling that basically threw out the Arizona law. So this is going to change for the Republican states. It's going to allow them to go forward to clean up voter rolls and to clean up the process, though you're not going to see the same type of state actions in some of these Democratic-run states that allow mail-in voting. So it's still going to be problematic, but it's a good start. And I think in order to get people comfortable with our voting system again, you're going to have to see a lot more of it.
You know, Jimmy, I want to say one thing, and that is, according to our election process, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris took over. You know, they won, and they took over the obviously the executive office. But I want to say one thing. From the very outset, wanted to keep an open mind and said that I really wouldn't voice a final opinion until the end of August, the very early part of September. And where I'm coming from so far, and I don't know why, and the reason I'm saying this is because emotionally, I have kept in mind what Peggy Noonan said at one time about Joe Biden. She said, I got a lot of respect for Joe. He's one of the class acts on the Beltway. And, you know, I take Peggy Noonan probably a little more seriously than I do some other op-ed folks, but I want to say that what I'm seeing right now in the executive office, because of what's going on what's going on in the area of actual facts and not emotions, is I'm a little disappointed. They have done nothing to date, and we are recording this today on July 1st, Thursday. Nothing has happened to date concrete dealing with the illegal alien problem. Kamala Harris was put in charge of that. I don't believe she's even been down there yet in person. I find it interesting and truly only political that the executive office is not willing to use the term illegal alien, even though we have people illegally crossing the border. That cannot happen in our northern borders. I know because I spent many, many hours in Canada when I was running my consulting business. I had some great Canadian clients. I love Canada, let me tell you. If I didn't cross all the T's and dot all the I's when I was running my business, I would have been in big, big trouble. The folks on the southern border are simply coming across illegally, and the Democrats, for whatever reason, obviously it's, you know, the Republicans say, we say they are simply looking to increase their voting strength. Whether or not that's true, to me, it doesn't matter. What does matter is the law of the United States is being broken, and the progressives are doing absolutely nothing to ensure that that doesn't happen. On, Jimmy.
If you can't control voter registration, if you have mail-in voting, if you have driver's license and identification given to illegals, and that driver registration automatically goes to voter registration, you can't control your voting population from citizens versus non-citizens and illegal immigrants that have come here. And what you've seen in California is a significant improvement in Democratic power and control because of using those types of activities. Now, what is really interesting to me, and what is actually so ironic, is that the argument against voter identification and against this vote harvesting is that it discriminates unfairly against minorities, Hispanic, Black, and Native American populations. And in fact, that's what Justice Elena Kagan wrote in her dissent, in her three-vote dissent on the Supreme Court. Now, what that shows to me is that white elite liberals somehow think that minorities don't have voter ID and don't have access or the ability to vote and don't have the responsibility enough to be able to vote. So how racist is that by white elite liberals using these justifications to open up complete voter, wide open processes that aren't challenged or aren't even able to be looked at because of some of the rules they put in place in their democratic processes? It's clearly an attempt to get anybody they can to vote in order to gain power, in my view, and not an attempt to put integrity into our election system. And I think that's going to cost them because people are tired of it.
Well, I think it's going to cost them too, but all I can say is we have to wait and see what happens. One thing that I have discovered since last November is emotions other than intellect seem to be playing a major role in the future of our country. And that concerns me a lot, Jim. It concerns me a lot, number one, because it tore apart our family, and number two, because it is simply doesn't make any sense at all. My opinion right now to close is that America needs to make some changes because the country is on the way down.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Back with Jim and Kenny. We are recording this on Friday before the 4th of July. We have an allotment of time with the radio stations. The time we have is 8 minutes and 15 seconds. If we go over that, we feel that what we're talking about right now is pretty important in terms of our opinions on things like critical race theory and some of the other issues that are out there. So if we run over, we will simply take the break for the radio stations and then run this in its entirety as a podcast weekend special. Jimmy, what I find to be interesting is Newsweek came out this morning. It's important to realize this morning is Friday morning, and they said that critical race theory should be banned from schools. You have an opinion on that?
Of course I do. And I think that there is a tremendous amount of pushback coming from parents, as well as, you know, people that have studied history and understand that this entire push for critical race theory is a political action that is really undermining unity in our nation. And I believe that,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that people are beginning to say, this is just ridiculous. You know, we had worked for generations to come to unity through, you know, slavery, through the Civil War, through Reconstruction. Then people like Woodrow Wilson, Democrat, establishing and institutionalizing segregation, and then the fight to separate, to get away from segregation. And then the civil rights fight in the 60s. Most of these efforts were actually led by conservatives and by Republicans in order to unify this country. And now we've got very loud progressives and Democrats attempting to use critical race theory as an entree into education in order to separate and identify different people. And I believe it's a much deeper problem. A lot of people are talking about basically Marxist ideology and theory behind it, which is to divide America. And I think it's dangerous. I think we have to have faith in our history. We have to have understanding that we've made mistakes but need to work towards a better future and not identify each other by our race or color, but by equality and by our character. And that's exactly what Martin Luther King said. Judge my children by the content of my character.
I agree. Martin Luther King was a great man. I also want to say that I find what you're saying to be 100% true. America has admitted its mistakes. American citizens have admitted their mistakes. The progressives, I believe, totally for political reasons, have fought against that and said that the conservatives are just a group of evil people. And I have to say that when America came together as a country, ended segregation, and admitted the faults of some of the historical faults that we made, I think for people not to admit that is, I don't want to say anything other than I think it's a real mistake. I had a conversation yesterday at book club about the concept of communism in America. The book club members who were there yesterday said that they strongly feel that Putin was 100% correct when he recently said that America will turn a communistic. I'm very sorry that that happens to be the situation today. All I can do is warn about it. I feel very, very badly for Sarah and Kyle's sons, my twin grandsons, because they're going to be right in the middle of it, and I feel very badly about that. I'm not sure how we got to this point, but I really, truly do believe, Jimmy, what are you doing? I really, truly believe, really do believe that that's where we are at, and the only thing that I can do as a 76... Oh, even the dog is angry. And the only thing that, and angry again, the only thing that I can do as a 77-year-old man is get together with all of the bloggers on my site and keep opining on this issue, because I believe that we are 100% correct. Doesn't matter if it's me in the United States. It doesn't matter if it's Tony in England. It doesn't matter if it's some of the folks, Larry, for example, in Colorado, Jerry and CFS back in the Midwest. It really doesn't matter who brings it up, but we have to keep this issue in the forefront. Jimmy, what do you think about that?
I think that this weekend is the 4th of July, that we should reestablish those ties to the sacrifices that the very young and idealistic leaders.
You got a great audience with Stephanie's dog attempting to guard the house in the background. This little guy weighs about 8 pounds. Anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah, so we need to reestablish our faith in the sacrifices that were made by the people that created this nation and the wonderful documents that came out of it, the Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July, and then eventually the Constitution, and the sacrifices that people have made since that time in order to preserve this nation based on freedom of thought and speech. And I think that most of us, and I know a lot of our friends here, the older ones, are watching this, and they've watched the decline of America for a long time. I do believe that there is enough people in America that they're willing to stand up and say, this is just not the right way to talk to each other. It's not, you can't silence people. You can't allow tech and corporate globalists to control our future. You can't allow pharmaceutical companies and the CDC and people like Tony Fauci to control and dictate our future. And I think that pushback is coming. I think as we must absolutely continue to educate our people and our children on the values that this nation was built on and the ideals that we're working towards, and not alienate us because of the failures of the past.
Well, I have to say that the failures of the past oftentimes have been done by people who I don't have a lot of respect for. They are people who aren't willing to look at both sides or all sides of every story. There are people who are run by emotions, and typically there are people who really don't stop and think and evaluate the progression of America. America is, in my opinion, on the way down. It was the greatest country in the world. We came in World War II, saved Great Britain, saved France, saved the Jewish race, in my opinion. A lot of my progressive friends will say, well, that's totally untrue.
We saved the world.
Exactly.
From oppressive communist authoritarianism, and we're going to have to do it again.
If we have the opportunity, as long as our leaders do what they're doing right now and don't wake up, I think we're going to be in trouble personally. Jimmy, we're out of time here, but I'm going to just simply take a commercial break, as I have to do for the radio stations. Anybody who wants to hear the rest of what we have to say, go to our website, www.kereport.com.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of the KE Report. One of the most talked about subjects on this particular program has to do with the medical industry in the United States. My friend Jeff Deist gave a talk back on June 17th of this year at the Mises Institute's Medical Freedom Summit, which was located in Salem, New Hampshire. I have an excerpt right now in front of me of Jeff's speech. He addresses virtually every single comment in this speech, Larry, that you complain about. I don't want to say ad nauseum, because I am starting to agree with you. Let me start out chatting with Jeff by saying, quote, Jeff, you said in the second paragraph here that First, in a certain sense, medicine in America is broken. Doctors and patients are unhappy. The quality of care deteriorates and costs keep increasing. Initially, Jeff, I'd like you to address those two concepts.
Well, I would say, Al, that medicine, along with maybe education and banking, is a field where government is heavily involved. And I think not coincidentally, we see costs going up and we see quality going down. Obviously, I'm biased. I'm very much pro free markets, even in medicine. But nonetheless, it's not just patients and consumers who are unhappy, Al. It's the doctors and the nurses and the providers who are unhappy as well. So we have a situation where we've created a very anti-market industry. Most people don't really know how much things cost. And most people don't really know how much they're paying. They know that maybe their employer charges them every month for their health insurance. And so what we've done is we've turned insurance into something it was never meant to be.
And what is
insurance
that?
Insurance is for when something catastrophic happens.
Right.
You're just going along in life and you get in a terrible car accident. You're going along in life, you get a cancer diagnosis. Insurance is not for just ordinary treatment, you know, dental cleanings, checkups, shots, an urgent care for the flu, a sprained ankle on the tennis court. And so once we started insuring for these things, and especially doing so through the requirement of Obamacare for people to have insurance, but even before that, the ability of employers to deduct the cost of employee health insurance, whereas as an individual you couldn't. And we forced all these people into insurance, and so we put all these middlemen, you know, whether it's government in the form of Medicaid or Medicare or VA, or whether it's a quasi-government third-party middleman at Blue Cross or Cigna or your HMO or your PPO, with all these middlemen in between, the patients and the doctors lost sight of each other and how much things cost. And so we don't consume medicine the same way we do other things. We don't consider the cost. We don't try to avoid unnecessary treatment. We don't try to, just stay healthy because of money. There's all kinds of ways in which the market and all of the discipline it would impose has really been skewed. And I think it's actually a very scary time, Al, because the percentage of Americans over 65, that percentage is set to double in the next years. And that's, in your later years is when you tend to consume more healthcare.
Of course.
And so when we see how unhappy doctors are, and I mentioned a survey, it's called the Great American Physician Survey, where only about half of the docs would even recommend their own profession, which we used to think of doctor as sort of a highly paid, high prestige profession. You know, they're unhappy too. So what that means, Al, is we're going to have more and more older people. And I fear that the best and brightest younger people are just not going to go into med school.
I know, Jeff, you brought that up. I want to ask you a question on something else that you brought up, and that is, even before COVID, American life expectancy declined 3 years running, 3 years in a row. Even before COVID, too many Americans were sick, depressed, fat, and unhappy with their physical and mental health. I wonder if we ever will have accurate data about undiagnosed and untreated cancer and other serious illnesses as a result of the hospital and clinic lockdown. Why do you say that, Jeff?
Well, a lot of people didn't go to the doctor. I mean, during COVID, if you look at hospitals, I mean, all kinds of surgeries were canceled. Virtually any sort of elective or semi-elective surgery was canceled. A lot of hospitals went broke and shut down and laid people off as a result because they make a lot of money off surgery, and that's their bread and butter day in and day out.
Right.
And so when you tell everybody to stay home, a lot of Americans gained weight, so that first and foremost will spread out through society in a variety of health problems. Cancer visits may not have happened, so early cancer treatment and detection might not have happened. Heart disease, diabetes, stroke, all of these things presumably got worse because everybody was home. And you know, there's a cost to that. It's going to be hard to quantify. It's going to be hard to point out because it's going to happen over many, many years. But it's frightening to think of.
Well, I got to tell you, Jeff, as you know, I've just gone through this in a very, very dramatic fashion with the demise of my wife of 47 years. I have some complaints right now about the medical system, but I'm smart enough to realize that perhaps some of my complaints are a little bit irrational because I'm a pretty angry cowboy right now. Let me go on to something here. We've got about 2 minutes left in this particular segment, but I want to go back to something other than the doctor thing that you mentioned. I do know, personally speaking, that most doctors are very unhappy right now, and I certainly don't blame them. In the next segment, I'll give you a very concrete example about somebody who just left. But anyway, you go on, Jeff, and you say, quote, but at the very same time, medicine, broadly speaking, is absolutely poised for incredible entrepreneurial breakthroughs, which will revolutionize not only the practice and delivery of medicine, but also how we think about healthcare altogether. Let's spend some time talking about that, Jeff.
Well, it can't be avoided because everything has gotten so expensive that we're going to be forced, whether the government's paying, whether insurance is paying, or whether we're paying as individuals, we're going to be forced to figure out how to go at this in a different way. Costs can't keep going up the way they have been. We know that. So I think, Al, what's going to happen is we're going to be more focused on prevention and health and diet and exercise and mental well-being and the kinds of things that can stop a lot of chronic disease from getting started. So I think that first and foremost. But beyond that, I think we're going to see a lot of development in cash, concierge medicine. We're going to see a lot of work pushed down to nurse practitioners and that sort of thing to save money. And I think we're going to see medical tourism. We're going to see more cash-only doctors. I think it's going to be actually quite an exciting time next couple decades.
Now, Jeff, we've only got about 2 minutes here, and then we've got to take a real quick commercial break. But I got to ask you this question. Please define what you mean when you say medical tourism.
Well, for instance, that's when people from Canada will travel to the United States to a cash-only clinic like Dr. Keith Smith's Oklahoma Surgery Center and have, let's say, rotator cuff surgery. They will just pay out of pocket. They'll pay a flat fee, which will cover the anesthesiologist, the surgery, the aftercare. They'll stay in a nice hotel room for a few days, and it'll be all-inclusive one price because under their Canadian system, you know, the rotator cuff is bothering them, and it might be a 2-year wait.
Right, right.
People will go offshore. They'll go out to a cruise ship, which is, you know, 12 miles offshore, however far to get into international waters.
Right.
And that cruise ship set up as a surgical suite. So there's examples like that happening now.
That's a very interesting transition that I do think could go on and occur. Jeff, I've got about 30 seconds here, and then we have to let the stations either air their news or go to a commercial break. What I want to talk about in the next close to 1 hour is you say medicine desperately needs to change. You're speaking to the choir, Jeff. Let's talk in the next segment about what kind of changes and who exactly is going to decide what.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Is it going to be political or is it going to be market? I think that's the question of the 21st century.
And let's talk about that. In your opinion, let's talk first, Jeff, about which vision we're going to accept. You say that the first vision is political. We'll call it fiat medicine. Talk about that, will you?
Well, that's what we've had increasingly in the late 20th and early 21st century now, is that greater and greater government control over medicine, licensing of doctors and nurses and practitioners and regulation of pharmaceuticals and payment by government entities like the aforementioned Medicaid or Medicare or VA. And then when payment is private or ostensibly private, it's through an insurance premium, which you're A, required to have by law, or were previously required to have by law under Obamacare, and B, the parameters that of that insurance, what it has to cover, and, you know, are all set by government. So we don't really have a free market system in the United States at all, save for a few, what I consider heroic doctors who have just gone out into cash only, what we call concierge medicine. And you know, so that's the non-political choice, is that having paying cash for basic services, having catastrophic insurance only for catastrophes, and letting the market discipline, you know, bring down the costs of things like MRIs, things like dialysis, surgeries, all kinds of things. So, you know, that's really the choice that we have in front of us. And what I fear is that we'll try to do it halfway. We'll try to have a little bit of both. And so what's going to happen now, I guarantee, is that we will have at least a two-tier medical system. Rich people are not going to sit around and wait. If you're Barbara Streisand,
right?
You know, you're not going to sit there and wait three months for a referral to a dermatologist or something. It's just, you know, every country on earth, from North Korea today to the former Soviet Union to Cuba at its worst points to, you know, Sweden and the UK and Canada with their socialized systems to the United States today. Every country on earth has a separate tier of medicine for the very wealthiest and most elite citizens. So there's no matter what they do, that will exist. The question is whether the rest of us normal folks, will be able to benefit from some of the cash and market discipline, or whether we won't.
Well, here's a wild opinion that a lot of people may get angry at me at. Now, you call market medicine your second vision regarding the future of medicine in the United States. I would have to say that the progressives are going to use this. It makes all the sense in the world to me, but the progressives are going to use this particular philosophy to further divide the country, in my opinion, Jeff. Any comments?
Well, I think that's true. There's a huge amount of support in this country, let's not kid ourselves, for so-called single-payer health care, which basically means government-provided.
Right.
And that's going to be a political football, I think, increasingly, as the Democrats and even a lot of Republicans are pushed leftward. There's going to be support for that. And there's basically two ways to do that. You can do that like the UK, where you literally have government doctors, a government healthcare system, government pharmaceuticals, and you go to a government clinic. You know, it's like the DMV.
Yeah.
Or you could have the French system, where you have ostensibly private doctors, but they're paid by the government, so the government sets the price. So there's some different ways to go about doing it. But look, I think that's going to be popular. I think you're going to, you know, there'll probably be individual states. If it can't get done at the federal level, there will probably be deep blue states like California and Massachusetts that will try their own. More power to them. I don't think it's going to work. I think it will suffer from all the free rider problems, for all the lack of incentives. But, hey, you know, our conference last week was not really about that. It was about exploring what we can do right here, right now, on the margins, you know, operating with you know, market approaches, with innovation, and, you know, working our way around insurance, working our way around regulations, working our way around government medicine, because there's a huge market. There's a huge market for it. And, you know, people will tap that market if we let them, if we don't crowd them out with too much state control.
You know, I want to make one comment. The progressives, in my opinion, and I am pretty politically informed, but the progressives have taken the argument that you're giving in another direction. They basically have talked about, you know, the poor downtrodden, the poor African Americans, et cetera, et cetera. I have seen such a change in American society in the last couple of years, ever since the election process started for the last election when Biden supposedly was elected. I have to tell you, I really wonder if the conservatives can compete effectively against the argument that is going to be put forth by the progressives. And I'll tell you, you made a lot of guarantees in this discussion, Jeff. I guarantee you that the progressives are going to say that we are evil people because we're even considering what Jeff Dice is talking about right now. You have any comments on that?
Well, I agree. Part of the progressive worldview is that healthcare, or what I shouldn't use that term, medicine. Let's call it medicine.
Yeah.
That medicine is different. It's different from any other good or service that can be provided by the marketplace. And first, because it's, you know, we have a right to it. That there's a positive right to medicine. And of course, that's nonsense. You don't have a positive right to force other people to pay for you or to treat you or to go to medical school so that you can have, you know, a heart operation. You know, Nobody has a right to a claim on other people. So, but the left fervently believes in a right to health care. And they also believe that health care is so unique that it can't be provided by the market. You can't just have supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere there's going to be a little kid who gets cancer and the treatment's going to be way more costly than his parents could ever bear. And
of course,
we have all kinds of market reactions to that, like St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. I think the left is not going to accept this. So I think we have to work around them.
And they're going to call us evil people for even bringing it up. Jeff, you have a rather extensive list of what you think is going to happen in the medical industry. You don't have time, and you may not even remember the entire list. It's somewhere around 20 different changes that you see happening. Describe the highlights of those changes, would you, Jeff?
Well, and these aren't predictions. These things are happening.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is they're going to accelerate and increase. Right now, we have lots of doctors who have switched to cash only. Let's say you and your family currently pay, I think my insurance premium is something like $1,500 a month for a PPO with me and my wife and two kids. So that's what is that, Al? $18,000 a year.
That's about what ours was, Jeff. Yeah, that's about what ours was. Yeah, okay, yeah. When we were your age. Go ahead.
So if you take that away, and if you were allowed to, Obamacare forbade this, but if you were allowed to just buy a really inexpensive high deductible policy for catastrophic only, you know, maybe a $25,000 deductible, and then you could use the remainder of that 18 grand to go out and you pay maybe $5,000 a year to a concierge doctor in your town, and in exchange for that $5,000 fixed cost, and yeah, you get same day visits, you get his cell phone number, you get home visits, you get immediately, you know, he'll call in prescriptions, all kinds of things. This sort of thing is growing, and this is concierge medicine has been used by the rich for years. There's cash clinics like Dr. Keith Smith's, which I mentioned, where people are having knee and shoulder and all kinds of surgeries for a menu of fixed prices, you know, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000. But I'm really excited about telemedicine because it turns out, and doctors will admit this, an awful lot of diagnosis and doctor visits can be handled over Zoom, just like we found out during COVID.
Sure.
So spending half your day schlepping across town waiting in some waiting room, I hope will become a thing in the past. So, there's a whole lot going on, and people are doing it because they have to, because costs are so out of control.
You know, you guys, I want you to do me a favor. Do yourselves a favor. Hell, don't do me any kind of favors, even though I need them at this point. I want you to take a look and go to the Mises Institute website. This issue has been discussed not only by Jeff, but also by some of his colleagues for quite some time now. The Mises Institute is, I have to say, populated by a group of very, very forward-thinking individuals. Check it out. Mr. Dice, always a pleasure. Thank you.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.